Answers to Your Tech Questions, the COVID edition. With a pandemic, everything has changed, including our relationship with technology. Chances are your hastily assembled work-from-home office doesn't have an IT department like you usually have. Your kids' virtual classroom might be in the next room. And because, you know, Murphy's Law, you've had to replace, at the very least, your home printer, and possibly much more expensive machines, too. I'm Jennifer Rooks. 6 months into the COVID-19 pandemic, we are depending on our devices more than ever before. But that doesn't mean everything's going smoothly. Today on Maine Calling, our tech team comes to the rescue to help us sort out problems and to help us decide what to invest in for the next chapter of our lives. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. For Maine Public Radio, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Living and working during a time of COVID sure puts a strain on our personal technology. Today, our tech team returns to answer your questions about home networking, new technology, and so much more. On the line with us, our tech team, Janet McKenney, Director of Library Development with the Maine State Library, Andrew Rosenstein, the owner of Techport, and Jared Maxfield, the owner of Necessary Technology. As always, we want to hear from you. How has the pandemic changed and challenged your personal technology needs and setup? I know, where do you start? Are you wondering if you need to replace some things? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome back to all three of you. And I can't believe that the last time I had all of you as guests together on the program was before we were all working from home, before the pandemic hit. So I know that you will be particularly sought after right now. Janet, Andrew, and Jared, I'll start with you, Janet, and we'll do this the fun way. We'll pretend like we're not all sitting here struggling with our home technology, and we'll look on the bright side and just ask you what technology you're excited about, because that's how I always start the show with you. Janet, what technology are you excited about today?
Well, I probably, make everybody cringe about being excited about Zoom, because, we're all, kind of tired of being Zoom, but Zoom to death and other technologies that allow for, people to meet virtually. But it's been great for us to work with the librarians statewide. And what I look at it as, it's been a great push to kind of push everybody to kind of increase their digital skills because they had to. And so, Zoom isn't necessarily new technology, but the amount of people using it and how they're using it has really, really increased.
Yes.
From a personal level, just fiddling with new cameras to make you kind of look better on Zoom and lighting and what microphone works best, that's been a challenge for a lot of folks. And so we've been doing a lot of that at the State Library.
Okay. Jared, what are you excited about these days?
I am not excited about Zoom. I can tell you that. I'm a little zoomed out, Janet. So I applaud you for staying positive. I it's been a long few months. So if we want to keep it fun, Microsoft just recently released their new flight simulator. And it's a technological marvel. They use actual GPS and GPS, but the maps and the actual topography of everywhere, including Maine. So I'm excited to get that set up probably towards the holidays, especially if they add some sort of 3D headset type addition. I think that might be the thing to push me and a lot of people into the 3D headset realm. But, it just would be exciting and nice to take the mind off the world as it's been the last few months and just sit in front of a computer and fly around and look at any place you want to go to in the world. So But it really is an amazing leap forward in technology for gaming and real life simulations. So that's some straight up geek stuff right there. I am definitely excited for that game.
That sounds fun. Andrew, what about you? Apple had its big September announcement yesterday. I understand no iPhone on the list.
Right. They've decided to coast a little bit on what they introduced last year. But some of the other products that are coming down are kind of interesting. The new revision of the Apple Watch is going to feature an oxygen sensor. So those of us who are feeling a little panicky at times can in 2 minutes know exactly what their O2 level is. As we all know now, it is a symptom of COVID when your levels begin to decline. Along with that, Apple has introduced new operating systems and for both the phone and Mac, and the phone operating system includes better integration for Apple's contact tracing application, meaning it's not downloaded as a separate application any longer, but it's more integrated into the whole operating system. So
Andrew, explain what that means. Does that mean if I have been diagnosed with COVID, my phone can tell me who I have been within 6 feet of in the last couple weeks?
Exactly. That the phones will communicate that information back and forth, so you'll be able to see, you know, who you've been in contact with. It's still in development and not, you know, there'll be improvements in the coming months. It's not fully integrated into state health department regulations, but more and more states are coming on board, and it can be a very helpful tool.
That's really interesting. So not only are we personally stretching our technological abilities, as Janet's talking about right now, I certainly know that I have been, but tech companies are stretching the way that they think about technology and what needs to happen next. Janet, what are you looking at on the horizon? What are you hopeful that will be right around the corner in part or maybe not because of COVID?
I think it's the whole trend I think that we're going to find from COVID is, you know, this whole ability to work from home and how to be productive from home and what kind of technology do we actually need to put in place to be comfortable working at home. But also, a nod to Jared about Zoom. But how do you make online engagement and online meetings and actually the ability to get work done either as a team or with individual people, you know, what technology beyond just the platform that you're using, but what kind of apps can make, you know, Zooming or, you know, Facebook live streaming or, you know, whatever platform you're using to meet with people virtually, how can that be more engaging and more exciting? But also, you know, taking care of yourself physically, because when you're sitting, you know, in front of a screen for so long, you know, people are dealing with eye strain and all that kind of stuff. So that's what I'm looking at.
And people are dealing with puppies. Jared, I want to ask you, other than dealing with barking puppies, what kind of security risks should people be thinking about if they're working from home? Many people work in an office where the IT department has set up all sorts of safeguards, especially if your company's dealing with other people's credit cards and things like that.
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, a lot of the companies, and especially medium to larger companies, are going to have their own IT department. And not only that, they're going to have not just software, but a lot more probably hardware through their networking on site to help them have a more secure facility and network, guard against intrusions and things like that. So when, you know, in the normal days, back in the good old days when you went to work and, you know, you were naturally a little bit more secure with that data because your company has preemptively taken care of a lot of that. These days from home, you know, we now have folks and we're working from home And we just have our regular kind of household router, our same kind of practices that often will lead into kind of compromising your computer or your own data. But now you're dealing with company data, customer data, and oftentimes very sensitive data. You know, we've seen a lot of, for as example, therapists. I've had a lot of customers over the last few months who are therapists, and they've gone to direct online therapy. So they're obviously keeping records and have information. So really trying to take a look at, you know, especially if you have sensitive information, what is set up, you know, the very basic things. Are you running a proper antivirus? Hopefully everybody does not run like default passwords when they set up equipment and things like that. But a lot of the newer style routers these days will also offer a little bit more in terms of security and monitoring to guard against intrusions. And also, I would think that companies hopefully could help some at-home employees, especially if the company knows they're dealing with that type of information, just be a little bit more protected, because cybercrime and scams are definitely on the rise, especially as people sit at home and use their technology so much more. So that's a great point. It's things that, you know, at-home employees and or their companies and organizations should be thinking about.
If you have a question for our tech team, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email with your question to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Andrew, I know a lot of people are using internet in a way that they, in Wi-Fi, in the way they haven't before. In my home at this moment, four people are using it, including myself, on the air. For those who are lucky enough to have high speed internet in Maine, and people who sense that their internet may be slowing down, how do you sort of untangle? Is this my fault because I don't have a good Wi-Fi system? Is it the router's fault? Is it my internet service provider? Help us figure out how to get the best possible internet service if we're lucky enough to be in a place that actually does have high-speed internet.
Right, right. It can really be a combination of a lot of different things. What we see mostly are old, out-of-date routers. So let's say if you've got a router, that's the modem that comes in from the cable company, if you have cable internet service, then really needs to be replaced about every 5 years or less. That can be a bottleneck as those switches age. And it may be a combination unit that provides Wi-Fi. Swap it out. If you rent it from Spectrum or Comcast, then you should get a new one. That's one way to increase speed. The other way is to play around with your settings a little bit. Often with internet service, you have to pay attention to something called DNS, which is domain name system. And it's a way that your traffic is routed, meaning do you want to take the road that everybody takes, or maybe you can find a high speed, you know, like the high occupancy vehicle lanes. And that requires resetting your DNS to, it's usually a number that has four components separated by a period. Really easy is to use Google's DNS superhighway, and that would be a number like 8.8.848, and you can enter a secondary one with two fours at the end. So that's a real simple way to increase the speed and kind of jump on to a high speed lane if it's available from your internet provider. And that's something that I do. There are other DNS systems like OpenDNS, helps route your traffic faster. You can take a look at that on Google. But those are two really fast ways of increasing your speed.
All right. And I also want to bring you into this conversation, Andrew. I think I asked Jared and Janet, but not you, what you're looking at around the corner. What's the new technology that you think maybe really change people's lives? And you're looking at what's next for these Zoom and other platforms where people can talk to one another and see one another at the same time.
Right. I think that you know, Jared's going to be using virtual reality goggles when he's on his flight simulator at some point. Hopefully it won't lead to virtual motion sickness. But I think the same thing is going to happen pretty quickly for Zoom meetings, that we're going to see a lot of development in getting people together in a virtual room. So meaning, you know, you may have to put on pants for a meeting, but, you know, you you may not be able to sit behind your desk. But the idea is that there'll be, right now it's a rough road, but the technology is getting much better to put people in the same virtual room. And we're going to see a lot of developments over the next year. So Zoom meetings will begin, or any type of video conferencing, will begin to feel more natural. I think that, you know, this is something that is our new reality. And the technology is going to catch up and make it a lot more comfortable and easier and feel more natural.
Jared, do you think we're ever going back?
Yeah, we'll go back. The world's going to go back to part of where we were. But I do think, to echo what both the other panelists have said, I mean, things are going to change. I think a lot of companies and are definitely able to look right now at their businesses and how things have been working, and probably realize that things can still be efficient and productive with folks working at home, meaning they can easily kind of trim and streamline a little bit. And, you know, I think also even us as employees, people who are able to work from home, it's a little bit of a different lifestyle. You know, it can be a little neurotic and crazy at times, obviously, to be stuck at home all the time, but it's probably also opening up opportunities for people to see that they can have a more balanced work-life lifestyle. So I think we're going to go back to a lot of where we were, but there's definitely going to be some long-lasting changes and lessons and differences that come out of this.
Janet, how will this moment change how libraries do what they do?
Well, it started a big change as libraries, you know, closed their building to the public, but they continued to offer services. And so the big, you know, the unbelievable thing was how many libraries started doing virtual programs and how they adopted all the different platforms to reach out to people. And what's transformed in that is that usually if you were going to have an author talk at your library, you know, the people that were in your community, the patrons of your library, were basically the ones to come, and maybe you had a few scattered people from, you know, surrounding areas. But now with everything going virtual, a library in the southern part of the state, a patron up in Aroostook County or Piscataquis County, can attend something, you know, at the library in Cape Elizabeth or Scarborough that's doing something virtually. And so it's really opened the library's doors beyond their community to the entire state. And so that's been so transformative that libraries, even as they're opening up, you know, they're still not able, because of, you know, the size of many of their meeting rooms and how, and, you know, the restrictions on how many people together for social distancing, are still doing virtual programs. And, you know, that is probably something that they'll continue to do because it has been received so well. So, as normally happens, libraries will end up doing, you know, like first it was print books and then ebooks. Now you have to support both. It's going to be face-to-face programming and virtual programming. And even things like curbside that many libraries have offered that the patrons in their community really like it from a convenience standpoint. So libraries are considering doing curbside as well. So,
if you have a question,
technology.
That's right. If you have a question for our tech team, we'd love to have it. 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Northeast Imports. In South Portland, specializing in the sale and service of pre-owned Subarus, northeastimportsllc.com. Maine Integrative Family Care, committed to working with small businesses and individuals on a new approach to healthcare. MaineFamilyCare.com. And Lamy Wellahan Shoes, helping Maine students attend college in their home state through the annual Maine Difference Scholarship. More at lwshoes.com.
Many veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan were exposed to toxic burn pits on their deployments, which may now be causing serious lung disease.
Our veterans cannot afford to wait decades like they were forced to with Agent Orange. People are dying.
I'm Mary Louise Kelly. The fight for veteran health benefits this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
And All Things Considered is later today at 4 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio. Here at Maine Public, we have a hidden gem. And that hidden gem is the InTune stream with Sarah Willis.
Richard Thompson with Bee's Wing from his album
Grantley
Mirror.
Phillips.
Yellow Weeds from his album The
Narrows. Enjoyed the music, and we're going to have some more great music on the way out.
I'm Sarah Willis, and I hope you are going to stay tuned because we have a lot more music coming up on Maine Public Radio.
She's worked hard to produce a stream of music just for you that you can listen to 24/7.
This is no hotel. This is no home. Just another bed where we sleep. Temporary home where we live.
That's online all the time or on the Maine Public app. Join us.
Go, take a float. Letting your wings unfold, but keeping everything down to a minimum. Everything that bears all. Tell them what you know.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, our tech team is here to answer your personal technology questions. My guest, Jared Maxfield, owner of Necessary Technology. Janet McKenney, director of library development with the Maine State Library. And Andrew Rosenstein, owner of TechPort. We invite you to be part of our conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll start with an email from Tom. He writes, I'm wondering if it's safe to upgrade to Mac OS Catalina. I have a newer Mac Mini, and I use it mainly for Adobe products and video editing, other than the usual web surfing, word processing, and Zoom, etc. Andrew, I'll send it to you.
At this point, Catalina has been with us for long enough that it is safe, especially if you have a newer machine. I think that Catalina has made a lot of improvements, and in terms of being a lighter operating system, meaning it's not a bloated, crushing kind of software integration. But one of the things that you really have to pay attention to is legacy software. If you have anything that you can't update, if you're running an old version of Microsoft Office, it just is not going to run on Catalina. So a good place to take a look at you know, what's safe to run in terms of software is Apple's own website, and they'll give you some idea of you know, what works and what doesn't.
All right. We'll go to Bernie, who's calling from Wellington. Hi, Bernie. Go ahead.
Yes. I would like to know, would you recommend a piece of equipment that backs up the computer and fits into the USB B port?
Jared.
Yes. Always. For 6 years now. Every day. Backup. I don't think any of us here could preach it enough. So I would usually advise backing up to an external hard drive, though, that will also plug into the USB port. Not just the thumbstick, you know, everyone knows the little thumbsticks, the flash drives. Those are more for short-term storage. I wouldn't trust those for long-term storage. So get yourself a good external hard drive. You can find them locally or online. You know, $50 to $80 is generally a range, and Windows has a great automatic backup program built in, and obviously so does a Mac with Time Machine. So both platforms make it very easy to back up, and having that as a process and something you do regularly is much easier than the alternative of possibly losing data or having to pay quite a bit to retrieve it. So please back up, and that's a great idea, the way to do it.
Good luck, Bernie. We have an email here that I have a feeling many people share this question. This is, she writes, I need to buy a device for my daughter for distance schooling. She has just entered third grade and ideally would like something with a keyboard and touch screen. Is there a Chromebook or laptop you would recommend? Would like something which would last a few years too, of course. Janet.
Well, actually, we went through this in my family with my sister, and we actually decided to get an iPad with the new smart keyboard on it so that, you know, you have that experience of actually keyboarding on something that feels like a computer, but the iPad is more affordable. It really comes down to what applications you're going to use and whether you really need that laptop experience. From at that grade level, you know, I think things could be done with, you know, the apps that are available for an iPad. Then, you know, the next step is getting up into lower cost PC laptops and whatever. But, you know, I think for that specific grade level, you know, I think that would be adequate. Then you're not spending a whole lot of money, and then you're able to make the decision as the child gets older whether to go to a laptop or stay with a more portable device. The new iPad that just came out, the eighth generation, and the smart keyboard, you know, is a really accessible product. Depending, you know, I wouldn't do Excel spreadsheets on it, but I don't know if a third grader would be doing that.
Yeah, and it's so interesting. I watched as my own kids navigated going back and forth between iPads with keyboards and laptops, something that was too difficult for someone my own age, but kids just seem to go back and forth really easily. Jared, you've got kids. Anything to add to what Janet said?
No, those are all great points. I mean, there's so many options. I would say, you know, especially if you have younger kids, you know, people working from home, sometimes going with the Chromebook type option, you know, I don't want to quite call them throwaways, but they are on the more inexpensive side sometimes. So younger kids, especially schooling from home, if they're compatible, accidents happen quite a bit, a lot more now than they used to. So that's always a good option, but you really got to just tailor each, you know, purchase to what somebody's actually going to do. That's what we try to do. We help try someone figure out what machine to buy. Is, you know, what do you actually do, and then work it backwards. So if you just do email, internet, music, video, Zoom calls, stuff like that, basic things, then yeah, any of those kind of basic machines can work for you.
And Andrew, what about older students, college age students, for example?
Well, for college age students, I if they're interested in a Mac, and many are, I really steer people toward a MacBook Pro. I think it has a lot of longevity and durability, and you can get a great deal on a base model MacBook Pro using your education discount through Apple, and you know, it does offer a significant discount. You know, it's a machine that's well built, and especially if you purchase AppleCare Plus, it does protect you against those, you know, very expensive accidents. There is still a deductible with AppleCare Plus, but it's nowhere near what it's going to cost. You know, if you have a liquid spill, your roommate, you know, at college does something you don't want to talk about, and you know, you got to get the machine repaired. It's not going to be like buying a new one. There's AppleCare Plus softens that expense quite a bit.
An email here from Lizzie. I'm in Jefferson and use Fairpoint. My Wi-Fi goes out several dozens times a day. Sometimes I have to unplug and plug it back in to get it going again. If I have a guest staying and using their device, it goes out constantly. Is this normal, or is there something I can do to resolve it? It's extremely frustrating to have Alexa stop and start several times during main calling every day. Oh, Lizzie, I bet that's frustrating. And I mean, excuse me, I'll throw this one to you, Jared.
Well, quite simple. It sounds like you have a failing router. To allude what Andrew said earlier, I mean, we typically tell people most routers 3 to 5 years. They tend to run warm, especially if you have things on top of them, so they can start to fail. One common thing that we see sometimes is people will come in and, you know, their device is having a Wi-Fi issue, and they say, well, it's got to be my computer because all the other devices in the house are working fine. But you can have a router that's starting to fail that will almost essentially pick on one device over others or have issues connecting. So, but the telltale sign is if you're unplugging it and then it kind of comes back, it sounds like a failing router. And we've been recommending and using, and I finally put in my own house, Google Wi-Fi, Google Nest Wi-Fi. It can be a little bit pricier than your standard routers, but it's very easy to set up. Anybody can download an app, set it up. It comes with usually a base of 2 pods, so you put them around the house and create a larger mesh-type network. But those work great, especially these days with so many more people in the house, more devices, running more things all the time. So, but sounds like she's describing, or the caller is describing, a router issue. And if you have to keep doing that, the simple thing is replace it, get a new one.
Eileen on Facebook, free photo storage website for teen who owns no computer but has photos and cell phones, so they can upload photos via a family member's computer but in own photo storage account such as Flickr. Janet, advice? Teen photo storage if the kid doesn't have his or her own computer but shares with the family?
It probably depends on whether it's an iPhone or a Android phone. You know, with the iPhone, you know, it would have to be iCloud. You know, I think it's the tough thing about the phones is the capacity to hold the photos. And, you know, with iCloud, you know, when you're, I think it still is, if you delete them off your phone, it's deleted from iCloud. So I don't know. I think Jared or Andrew might have a better solution because people will probably come to them with that same question. But there's also Google Drive. And so having a Google Drive to offload phone photos, you know, would be a way to go as well.
Andrew, thoughts?
Yeah, I would agree. It depends on your device. If you have an Android phone or a PC, Google Photos is a great place, as Janet said, to for your photos to live. The benefit is that you're not tied. I mean, Shutterfly is great as well. As a photo processor, you can create books, you can create prints, but your photos are all sort of locked in the Shutterfly universe. And there are a couple of other companies out there. But Google Photos is great, and iCloud Photos, if you have an Apple, can't be beat.
And Jared, I'll turn to you as well, because I know photo storage is such an important thing to so many families.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's so important that, you know, typically in my own personal usage and what I recommend to folks is that's something I'd almost advise a little bit of everything. Double back it up. Use an external local hard drive, so you always have a local backup of your data. And anything that's uber important, like photos or tax documents or something you don't want to lose, back it up secondarily to the cloud. I tend to think of the cloud essentially as my safety deposit box, and my external hard drive is kind of the day-to-day checking. So that's the normal backup, but and then the cloud is your kind of fallback on that. So, but especially with photos, because I'm sure Andrew has been in the same boat, but when you have to explain to somebody that their family photos or important things are gone and not coming back, that's a tough conversation, and it can easily be avoided by backing up locally and or to the cloud. And if it's that important, why not do both? It's not that difficult.
What is your tech question? We have our experts on today. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. 399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Breakwater, inviting you to learn more about their outdoor learning spaces and plans for the school year. school.breakwaterlearning.org. Fallbrook Woods, a Maine-owned memory care assisted living community in Portland, supporting the unique needs of those with memory impairment. fallbrookwoods.com. And Central Maine Power, committed to bringing 500 solar projects online in the next 3 years. Learn more at poweronmaine.com.
On September 16, 1903, the fishing schooner George F. Edmonds was headed towards South Bristol Harbor in a gale when the ship ran straight into the rocks along the Pemaquid Point shore. The shipwreck took the lives of the captain and 13 of his crew members. Only two of the company survived. The storm at Pemaquid Point also claimed the smaller schooner Sadie and Lily. These shipwrecks occurred despite improvements made to the Pemaquid Point Lighthouse when it was rebuilt in 1835, and new lighting, which included 8 oil lamps and 8 reflectors, was added.
On This Day in Maine's History was created in partnership with the Maine Historical Society and made possible through the generous support of Bernstein Scher and Maine Masons, celebrating their bicentennial in Maine. Happy birthday, Maine!
On the next Commonwealth Club program, this has been a challenging year for most people, but whether it's the COVID pandemic or economic crisis or civic unrest, young people in America have faced the brunt of many of these problems. Join us for an expert discussion about how Generation Z is faring and how it is forming its view of engagement in our democracy on the next Commonwealth Club radio program.
And that's coming up this afternoon at 2 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, answers to your personal technology questions. My guests, Andrew Rosenstein, who is owner of Techport, Jared Maxfield, owner of Necessary Technology, and Janet McKenney with the Maine State Library. If you'd like to join our conversation, our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. A brief email from Janine. She writes, folks should check out refurbished equipment on makers' sites. Andrew, why don't we talk about that? How to choose between refurbished and new?
Oh, boy. well, you know, you really have to be very careful with refurbished equipment. And there are, for Apple computers, I find that there are really only a couple of trusted sources. And you can get a great deal on a machine that is in great condition. And the worry about purchasing some refurbished equipment is that it may have been liquid damaged. There may be things wrong with it that, you know, the machine hasn't been fully tested, or, you know, there are all kinds of people come to me often with machines that they've purchased from all kinds of sources, and some of them are running just fine, but a lot of them have a hidden issue. It's a bit like buying a used car from somebody, you know, who folds up and disappears into the night. I generally trust Apple's remanufactured website, which is you can access that through apple.com by going down to the bottom of the page and looking for remanufactured and clearance items. Apple's process for refurbishing Macs very often you can't tell the difference between a new one and a refurbished one. You can save a couple of $100s on many of the many Macs that way. And you know, if you're looking for another source, I've had a lot of customers that have had very good luck with a company called Mac Sales, which is located in Chicago. They make a lot of equipment dedicated to Apple computers and Macs. They're a really good resource. They offer a great warranty, and you know you're getting a solid machine. If something goes wrong, you've got somebody accountable. But the good thing about Apple machines purchased from Apple, you still can get AppleCare warranty, for instance, even on a remanufactured machine. So it's a good deal, and you can trust it.
We'll go to Steve, who's calling from Wayne. Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thank you. There was a caller earlier that said she had to keep unplugging her router because it kept going out. I had the exact same problem. I went to Best Buy. The guy said, oh, you need a new router, a modem. And I didn't know how to hook it up. And Spectrum is the cable company. I called tech support. They were very helpful. Helped me figure it out. It's been working so far, so I think it's good. But this morning, I needed to print something in a hurry, and the wireless printer wasn't connecting. So I called Spectrum back, and to connect the wireless printer, you need to go to the printer itself and go through a menu, which I did not know, for it to find the new router modem. And they walked me through it, and they were very professional, and now it works. So for a printer, you need to go to the printer menu on the screen in order to make that work.
Steve, I'm so glad you called, and thank you for that tip. And Jared, it's always something, isn't it?
Yeah, it is always something. But to his point, yeah, a lot of times you do need to keep in mind anytime you change out any equipment or buy a new computer or add a new device or swap out your router or modem, one thing is often daisy chained and connected to the other. So a printer is a perfect example, especially a lot of us have wireless printers now. And just like the caller realized, you don't realize that it needs to be set up until you actually go to use it. But trying to think about if you get any help from, you know, any service or provider, trying to think about when you change out a piece of equipment, almost trying to map out the things you're going to have to do and change and be responsible for and have a little bit of a list so that you can tackle it early and not let it come back to bite you down the road.
Well, Steve, thank you so much. One thing I've been channeling, and I'll throw this back to you, Jared, I've been channeling the patience that I think all of, I know the members of Maine Public's IT department all have, and I suspect you do too. You kind of have to put yourself in a different mindset when you decide to change out some technology, don't you?
You do. You know, for us, you know, I always joke, we don't just fix computers, we help fix people, because it's very, very psychological when you come in, you're stressed out, you know, especially these days, if you're working or schooling from home, there's downtime with the machine. And especially if there's going to be a major change, it can definitely be stressful. But, you know, we always recommend it's, you know, this too shall pass, take a deep breath, but make a plan and try and stay organized. And that's something we try and help our customers do. And then not just do it once, but kind of keep doing the same good technology habits, because doing a little bit every once in a while will just make it much easier and help you avoid some of those bigger issues and situations. But computers are going to fail. They're never going to fail at the right time. It's always the worst time. So take a deep breath, stay as positive as possible, and you'll get through it.
Sure, and banging on the keyboard really doesn't work. We're going to go to John in Freeport. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. I have a question about speed. Now, on my computer or my iPad, when I check the speed, and I'm with a cable company, I have like 233 for a download and 5.88 for an upload speed when I check it. I just checked a little bit. But what is the lower end that I could get? I'm wondering if I could save any money if I got a lower speed with the cable company, because this has become so expensive, for Internet. So I was just wondering what the parameters are. I don't do streaming and so forth. Mostly it's email, and I like to do podcasts and things like that.
All right. Janet, do you know the answer?
So it sounds like you're asking whether you could probably downgrade the speed of your connection with your ISP to save money because you're not using it for streaming. So, I think it would depend on what the ISPs are offering. So a lot of them are already at like a minimum internet speed, you know. And a lot of it's tough to, you have to use a can opener to figure out what you're paying for the internet portion or TV portion. So, you know, if you're on cable, it's one thing, or if you're on DSL through somebody else, it's, you know, another thing. But I'm not sure you're going to be saving a lot of bucks by downgrading because you don't need the speed that you're paying for. You know, if when you purchase something, you know, they sold you like a super high speed or a booster thing, you know, you may be able to downgrade and not worry about the connectivity since you're not doing any streaming.
All right, John, good luck to you. We have Megan on Facebook writes, and this is going to refer back to something we were talking about earlier. My high school student has a Chromebook, which has limitations for the students using them. They are not able to stream educational videos and be on the class online meeting at the same time. Many other glitches as well. The school is switching to Dell. Are you surprised to hear that, Jared?
No, and that's why we talk about you really need to customize and tailor the technology to what somebody's doing and work it backwards. So, you know, a Chromebook, while it's more of a, you know, less expensive, but you know, you're not running a Windows or an Apple system where, to their point, you can't be bouncing back and forth and running two things at the same time. The Chromebooks, some of them are almost like big glorified phones or tablets. So in a laptop form. So there's some things you can do and some things you can't do. And we are finding, you know, especially in a state like Maine, we've talked about a million times the technology gaps and divides. But, you know, we also have a lot of schooling at home and people trying to educate their children on technology that might be either antiquated or underperforming. So as much as possible, you need to kind of figure out what you're going to do first and then work backwards. But that point's absolutely correct. There's some things you just can't do with those that will be essential to the current environment.
I'm going to go to an email from Amanda. Andrew, this one's for you. If I am having trouble with my old MacBook Pro communicating with a peripheral printer to AirPrint, but my phone communicates easily with the printer, and I've checked to make sure they are all using the correct Wi-Fi connection, is there a way to troubleshoot without having to drag both into TechPort to resolve?
Oh, boy. Well, that's kind of the trouble with mixing old and new technology. If you have a MacBook that's running an operating system that is a couple of operating systems back, and you've got a phone that's running the newest operating system, then you know you may have a disconnect with how your peripherals perform, like your printer. The real question sometimes is, you know, did it work before? Has anything changed? You know, have you updated your system and maybe lost the configuration to run that printer? And there are a couple of workarounds. If you just can't get AirPort to function, or I mean AirPrint to function, and you've updated your Mac as far as it's going to go, you know, you may be able to share documents with your phone and print from your phone if that's working. You may have to resort to the old-fashioned plug it in. Most printers do not ship with a cable, a printer cable, any longer, but most of them have a port that you can use a plug-in printer cable, and that's generally the easiest workaround, and that can be a way to keep an old machine still functional.
Graham on Facebook writes, what is the best and most trusted way to get rid of old laptops that no longer work, they don't boot up, and you want to make sure they don't end up in the wrong hands? I can just hear my friends at Goodwill calling me up and saying, bring them to Goodwill. We clean them to Department of Defense standards. Jared, other than taking your laptop to Goodwill, any other thoughts?
No. Actually, Goodwill has a program, I think you're referring to, called Good Tech, and we send a lot of equipment and machines there. The only thing I would say is, and I believe it says on their website, I mean, it's always best practice if you can to pull or destroy your own hard drive or before you send it in if you're worried about stuff that's on there. They do have a process they go through, but at the end of the day, good tech program will hopefully, if a machine can be given a second life or a part, gets into their store and helps somebody who needs it. And if not, then at least gets broken down and goes through a proper electronics recycling and just doesn't end up in the landfill.
We'll go to Steve, who's calling. Oh, Andrew, did you want to jump in? Go ahead.
I just wanted to jump in with one more add-on to what Jared's mentioning about recycling. There is a local company that I've been using for a long time, and they're really wonderful. They do all of the work here in Portland in terms of removing dangerous components from the machine and wiping the hard drive securely. And it's another option. The company's called Computer Be Gone at computerbegone.com. And Hannah and Ron Kramer do a great job. And I've used them for many years. So that's another alternative. They do offer free pickup in Portland, but if you have a number of machines, they'll come to you.
Great. We're going to go to Steve in Naples. Steve, we're getting tight on time, so if you could be quick, that would be great.
All right. My question just was, is there a cell phone signal booster that you can recommend, or is there even such a thing? I live in a spot where I've tried several companies, and the one I have is the best, but I still drop calls, and I didn't know if there's a signal booster I could buy somewhere to help.
Oh, interesting question. Who knows the answer?
AT&T makes that device, Jared. What is it that you can put in your attic?
And if you have a good, you have to talk to your provider, really. Different carriers have different equipment, but a lot of the carriers will actually have a device that you can hook up in your home, which will piggyback off the internet and help you get a signal out that way if you don't literally have a good signal through the air. But that's something to speak to your carrier about, what their particular options are.
Yeah, I think AT&T's is called an M-cell, and if you're in an area without good cell service, sometimes they'll even provide that at a really good price. Steve, thanks so much for your call. It is going to be our last call of the hour. Thank you to our guests, as always, and hope you all are well. Sorry we're not all in the studio together. Janet McKenney is Director of Library Development at the Maine State Library. Jared Maxfield is owner of Necessary Technology, and Andrew Rosenstein is owner of Techport. Lucy Suchek ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as helpful links and resources, by visiting mainecalling.org. Today's show will be broadcast again tonight at 7. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.